Hi, this is Scott Becker. I'm the publisher at Becker's Hospital Review and Becker's Healthcare. I'm joined today by Bob Rogers. Bob is the chief data scientist in the data center group at Intel. Bob is going to speak with us today about predictive analytics in healthcare. And predictive analytics in healthcare is such a fascinating area in that the acceleration in what's gone from ideas to actual practical use has increased dramatically over the last few years. Bob, with that, let me stop and let me ask you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and when you joined Intel and so forth.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here. So I'm Chief Data Scientist for the Data Center Group here at Intel. My mission is to put powerful analytics in the hands of every decision maker. I joined Intel a little over 2 years ago. And prior to that, I had quite a winding career. Started as an astrophysicist working on computer models of stuff falling into supermassive black holes. I got interested in artificial neural networks, which are the precursors to today's deep learning. And that resulted in a 12-year career managing a quantitative hedge fund in which we did short-term futures trading. When that came to its natural end, I got into healthcare, became product manager for a medical device globally, and then started a company in 2009 to take all the data that was being liberated by the High Tech Act and meaningful use, and to really put it into a context where it could be used to improve healthcare. 2 years ago, Intel was contemplating a shift from just a hardware and sort of the software that companies use to run their businesses generically, to really understanding how does the shift to data-driven software and data-driven analytics impact things. And so they brought me on as chief data scientist to help guide that transformation.
What are some of the most interesting things in predictive analytics in healthcare that you're seeing today?
So there's some really amazing applications both inside healthcare and outside healthcare that we could talk about. Let's start by defining predictive analytics. So when I think about predictive analytics, I'm really thinking about two different ways of using analytics. In both cases, we're figuring out what we would measure even in a situation that we can't measure directly. So one of those situations is the future. We can't access the future directly. So what we do is we predict. We take information from the past, we try to generalize it, and then we predict. So that's one branch of predictive analytics. The other branch is actually measuring what we can't measure directly, but at the current time. So for example, there's an interesting example of analytics that I can get into more that we've done at University of Pennsylvania at Penn Medicine, where they're determining if a patient looks like a heart failure patient, and it's happening at the time of discharge where there's no opportunity to spontaneously do an echocardiogram or other diagnostics, but they need to make a game time decision about what's the subsequent care for the patient after they're discharged. And so you need to make a good inference about that patient in order to proceed. So in fact, I'd say that, you know, that Penn Medicine example is a really good example of what we're seeing in predictive analytics. From a modeling point of view, the really great thing about that work is that they've taken all the text and all the medications from the patient's stay and used a machine learning algorithm to automatically assign a particular phenotype to that patient. So they can recognize patients with all kinds of different characteristics. And one of those characteristics is this appearance of being fragile the way a heart failure patient is fragile. And it really allows them to impact the way they follow up after discharge.
Got it. Let me ask you a follow-up question. Intel has always been known for sheer computing power. What are some of the other examples of what you work with in healthcare? And how does Intel work with healthcare? Is it with companies, with institutes, with providers? Can you give us a couple examples of how you bring Intel's computing power to bear?
Yeah, so the whole idea for Intel is we like to work with the end users of our technology to help them get the most value out of the hardware that they've acquired. And if we do that and they get value from their data center, then of course they'll continue to invest in analytics. And these days, given that analytics is such a really distinguishing characteristic, it's a competitive advantage if you're good at analytics, think we're really providing a lot of value in those engagements. So Penn Medicine is an example. One of the more compute-intensive and interesting examples is work that we're doing with the Broad Institute. So they have a genome and analytics toolkit called GATK. It's one of the more commonly used analytics toolkits. And we've actually worked with them to take the entire full genome processing pipeline down from weeks down to hours. And that really has huge impacts in terms of not only our ability to get meaningful insights from the data in a reasonable time, but also to think about how could we proactively care for patients as, for example, cancer patients, cancers mutate. You want to be able to track that with genomic sequencing and proactively change up drugs. So there's a real clinical outcomes impact to this work, and it's also allowing us to pull together really interesting analytics that just weren't accessible because they were so cumbersome before.
And I was going to ask you about something you and I talked about earlier, which is the use of computing power to look at structured data and unstructured data, and if you could explain a little bit of that and why that's important.
One of the other really interesting examples that we have right now is work we're doing with UCSF, in which we've created a very unique computing environment for them that allows them to do both deep learning and analysis of unstructured and structured data from clinical records. So the opportunity is to have a single infrastructure that can analyze text, that can analyze images, that can do calculations on structured data, put it all in context, and allow them to create new ways of making inferences around data that really couldn't be done in an integrated way before. The big breakthrough in all of that is this ability to incorporate unstructured data in your predictive analytics. So previously, most analytics were done with structured data. That's the coded data that exists in databases. It's a single number or a single piece of text that's been pared down to its absolute bare minimum and then put into a field in a database. That information is, of course, very important. Lab values and diagnoses are important. But one of the things that I discovered a few years ago in a study that I did, we integrated data from a large number of different sources about patients to create an integrated problem list. And what we discovered is that 65% of the time, key clinical conditions such as history of heart attack, history of a deep vein thrombosis, history of a brain bleed, those are things that always impact your care, regardless of how long ago they happened. 65% of the time, they weren't showing up in structured problem lists. So we've got a major problem with missing data. At the same time, if you look at major conditions like heart failure, patients who are coded for heart failure, 30% of the time, they don't actually have heart failure. It's a false positive that was induced by the billing system or by some other complexity in the patient's care. So the question is then, do you throw the baby out with the bathwater? Is all the data useless and we can't do analytics? Well, what we found is the answer is no. The value is actually in the text. So doctors take dictation, they write notes for themselves, they also receive consult letters and discharge summaries. There's a lot of valuable information in text and scan documents, and so those are unstructured data. They have to be analyzed to be understood. And so it turns out that some of the biggest breakthroughs are happening as we build up technologies to understand this unstructured data.
Got it. Tell us a little bit about what's happening today versus what you see happening just 3 to 5 years out. I mean, we've seen this huge acceleration in the use of predictive analytics or being able to really dig into structured and unstructured data and give out useful information that people could use for planning and actually care clinical outcomes. What do you see that's going to happen a few years from now versus happening today? Any ideas or thoughts?
Yeah. So one of the big trends that I'm seeing is that we're realizing that predictive analytics has its most impact when it's filling a gap somewhere in the care system. So if you think about doctors and surgeons and imagine what is the most effective one of these highly trained individuals can be, and then imagine how much would an intelligent system or a predictive analytics system actually improve them from where they are, those differences are generally pretty small. That is, we're not moving the needle a whole lot by giving a highly trained member of the healthcare system a automated information summary or analytical result. However, the rest of the health system is increasingly needing of detailed information. So, for example, patients are the least trained member of the health system, yet patient actions at the end of the day underlie pretty much every single piece of care. If you look at care managers and case managers, who are increasingly important in a value-based care system, they have certain areas where they're highly trained and many activities where they actually don't have access to the information they need, either because it's coming from other systems or because there's such a variety and diversity of activities that they need to do that they just can't be trained in all of them. So those are the places where we're seeing a lot of traction happening with predictive analytics. It's sort of the new generation of decision support, providing a way to fill the gaps in how care is delivered and to fill training gaps.
One of the things that you just mentioned, which I think is a fascinating observation, is one of the strengths of predictive analytics won't just be the help that it gives to the most senior caregiver or the most experienced caregiver, but the way that it will help people at the direct levels of care, such as the patient themselves or the person who's in the field, and the ability to make care more accessible to lots of people. Am I fairly summarizing or characterizing what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the more training someone has, the less a piece of intelligent technology is going to elevate them. And so there are lots of opportunities in all the ambiguity of care delivery at the ground level where there are needs. Actually, a really interesting capability that's being developed right now is the portable ultrasound. And this is a great example where you can imagine being able to take ultrasound anywhere in the world. It could be extremely valuable because it has high diagnostic value if it's done right. It doesn't cause damage to the patient. It's non-invasive. But the challenge is that it requires a highly skilled technician to acquire ultrasound images that are of good enough quality to use for clinical applications. So how do you get a paramedic, for example, to be able to capture good enough ultrasound images to be able to guide the care of a patient in the field? And one of the answers is with advanced analytics. So we're really talking about technology that's a mix of predictive analytics and AI, but it's really where the technology is trending and where the system actually is being built to guide the user to capture good images so that a well-trained clinician can interpret them somewhere else. That really opens up a huge amount of life-saving opportunities, both at sites of trauma in the third world, where access to highly trained individuals is much more restricted. And even in the ED, when a trauma patient comes in, they need to have an ultrasound acquired within the first minute or two. And the probability of having the right technician there at that exact moment is very, very low.
Bob, I'd like to finish up by asking you a definitional question about two things that I've heard a lot about in the last couple of years, but that I'm still learning about, but you'll be able to give better insight into. And the two definitions are the definition of artificial intelligence and also the definition of unstructured data. Can you give us some quick insight into those two terms?
Yeah, so really the way to think about unstructured data is it's anything that's not a single number or a single piece of text, a small piece of text. So, you know, your audio or video from the internet or from a clinical system would be unstructured. Text is unstructured. One of the greatest sources of information in healthcare is actually the scanned documents that come into the EHR through fax. Those are nicely typed documents that get turned into an image. That's about as unstructured as it gets, but they're full of really valuable information. So think of anything that's audio, video, text, image as unstructured, and we're in a revolution right now in our ability to analyze those data sources, both with traditional machine learning and natural language processing, and also with deep learning, which is this whole burgeoning area of technology that's just exploding right now. When we talk about AI, I think of it as a continuum. our analytic systems have traditionally been question answering systems. So I want to do a report from a database. I want to know how many diabetics do we have in our system. Someone's going to do a query, get a report, and say, we have this many diabetics. As you move a little closer to AI, you start to have deep learning systems that can interpret images. So if I show you an image that's got a cat in it, I can apply a deep learning system that can tell me that there's a cat. But AI comes in when we realize that for unstructured data, like a picture of a cat, there are many, many other questions that one could ask. So for instance, what kind of cat is it? How old is it? What's in the background? Are there two cats? What are the cats doing? Every single question has a different answer and potentially a different AI or analytic system to answer that question. The AI really comes in, and we're right at the place where these things are being built right now, that by using context, the AI system can figure out what question to ask. So if I'm a cat lover, it might just tell me that there's a cat. So, oh, I should look at this picture. But if I'm a marketing person, maybe I'm interested in what are the logos in the background of this picture that happens to have a cat in it? What are the products that are being used? So this extension of being able to ask questions based on context is really where AI comes in my opinion. And so it's allowing us to not only understand unstructured data, but understand what do we need to know about this unstructured data.
In terms of that, it's almost like if you were doing lab experiments, to date, you always needed a scientist in the lab, he or she asking, what's the hypothesis that we're looking at? What's the question that we're looking for? What are we trying to test against? And AI would essentially speed this up dramatically by having the computer sort of start to figure out what those questions are we need to ask. Is that a fair assessment?
That's actually a great analogy, that we're going from supplying the hypothesis ourselves as humans to having the system make a good guess about the environment and what are the relevant questions to ask.
I'm going to ask you one more question. Moore's Law and its application to data analytics and predictive analytics. A little thoughts on sort of the acceleration and then how you see the application in predictive analytics.
So Moore's Law is really the observation that Gordon Moore made around the time that he co-founded Intel back in the 60s, that the ability to compute within any particular size computing device, so imagine like a centimeter square chip, the idea was that the ability to compute would double every 18 months or so, just simply because the technology was could be pushed and pushed and pushed. And so Intel has really lived by Moore's Law. We've been the engine for driving Moore's Law, and every 18 months, and these days it's maybe slightly longer than 18 months, but still pretty close to that cadence, we're driving new technology that doubles the amount of computing in any small piece of silicon real estate. And so what does that do for predictive analytics? I've referenced deep learning as a major new capability that's coming out. Deep learning as a theoretical construct has been around since at least the 80s, but it's actually having practical application now because Moore's Law is allowing us to do the computing we need to do on huge data sets. So what has changed? The internet and the growth of computing broadly and the number of devices that are generating data mean that we have more data to use as examples to train systems that can learn. So that's one thing. Then the second thing is we've advanced some of the algorithms that we use to make them better for interpreting data. And that's, just the growth of the deep learning algorithms themselves. And then the final thing, which is driven by Moore's Law, is that we have the computing ability now to take 10 million labeled data points as examples and have a deep learning system learn from examples. So all of a sudden, we can process tens or hundreds of millions of documents to understand references to particular diseases. We can train deep learning systems to recognize not only that there are cats, dogs, and trees in photos, but actually very subtle things like what's happening in the background. And so Moore's Law is really this pace of innovation, and we're at a point where that pace has made it possible to really build systems that understand data of all kinds, not just numbers, but text and images and video. And it's a heady time in the world of analytics.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you. Just as tremendously insightful to get a chance to speak with you, and I hope our audience will enjoy it as much as I did. I want to thank you again so much for being a part of this. Thank you, sir.
Scott, thank you very much, and I look forward to our next conversation.